How do we do this? How do we do this?
What's this? Monumental day. To have shut down the New York Stock Exchange and also to be appearing on the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast.
You know what's so sad? I didn't know anything about the New York Stock Exchange until you just mentioned it, and I looked at the trends on Twitter. NYSE and New York Stock Exchange trending. So what's going on there, Wish?
There's technical difficulties that have shut down the New York Stock Exchange. What's amazing is that Bane was trending for a while because he shut down the Gotham Stock Exchange and the Dark Knight Rises. And then also Skynet was trending, the supercomputer from the Terminator movies that eventually causes Judgment Day and Armageddon. So people are in a really good mood these days.
It's great. Everyone's really happy. You know what? Just go to the CCM Hockey Twitter feed and watch this Connor McDavid move with the intra-squad game all day long to put a smile on your face. How about that?
Five goals, buddy. Five goals in the intra-squad game.
You know what's... Okay, first of all, holy smokes, 7,000 people. Second of all, you know what the first highlight from the whole thing was? Leon Draisaitl blowing by him. The first thing, Draisaitl just undresses him, and then McDavid kind of goes, okay, it's time for me to put on a show. It scores five goals.
Of course. Of course, he does.
Haven't you wanted to, and I'm not going to make much of an intra squad game, but haven't you wanted for a long time to find that one player who, when you embarrass him, gets angry and does something spectacular? The Oilers were like this. The Oilers were like this in the 80s, Wish, in that when you scored against them, it almost seems as if it made them mad. Like they were like angry at you for having the disrespect to even try to score a goal on them, and they'd come back and score five. If you could find that in a hockey player, because we haven't had one since, that Oilers squad.
McDavid's the type, yeah. I mean, McDavid totally is the type that would come back and embarrass you, and, you know, you score one against him, and he'll score three against you, and that kind of thing going on. Yeah. Five goals in a 4-on-4 and then 3-on-3 exhibition game, intra-squad. And, again, like, could you maybe just, like, set the bar a couple notches low? Like, at this point, for McDavid, what would be a reasonable expectation for his rookie season? Like, knowing what we know about him, seeing what we've seen from him, him being what he is, and skating who he's going to skate with, like, where is the floor for what you expect out of McDavid this season?
It's a rookie season. You're playing against men. You never want to say a rookie's going to walk in and be a point-a-game guy. But doesn't he kind of have like 82 points or maybe more written all over him?
That's the floor. When he starts to 80 points. 80 points is the floor.
As a rookie, jeez. Oh, man. Maybe.
80 points is the floor.
Could be. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Could be. Gonna be a lot.
There's no avoiding it.
The one thing that'll be fascinating with McDavid is... you wonder, you know, this is with all due respect to Alex DeBrincat and Nick Betts and these types of players, Nicholas Baptiste that he was playing with the Erie Otters. You wonder how many things he wasn't able to do because guys around him couldn't keep up. They couldn't keep up with the speed, and they couldn't keep up with thinking the game at that level. Well, now he's got guys that do. Like, I'm wondering what we're going to see out of Connor McDavid now that he's playing with guys that are closer to being at his level and that are bona fide NHLers and then have a number of years of hockey under their belts.
There you go. Here's a guy that's above our level. He's on the phone now. We're going to talk to him about the NHL offseason and his own team's offseason. He is San Jose Sharks GM Doug Wilson. He joins the Merrick vs. Wyszynski podcast. It's me, Greg. Over there is Jeff. And, Doug, thanks for joining us on this lovely summer day.
I can hear you now, guys.
Oh, there we go.
Yay!
There he is. Doug Wilson, GM San Jose Sharks. Yeah, we got you now, Doug. Thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Very good.
Hey,
yeah, we had a little bit of trouble, but now we're fine.
I'm curious about general managers and when you actually take vacation and how long do you take? When does Doug Wilson go bye-bye for the summer?
Probably around August. I mean, right now we've got 43 players here in for our development camp. We've had a little bit more time off this offseason than we have in the last 10 or 11 years, so we've tried to use it well, but I'm looking forward to August.
Yeah, it's been a busy little offseason for you so far. Let's start off with the coach, because I don't think we've spoken about the coach with you, and I haven't read too much from you about Pete DeBoer. What is it about Pete DeBoer that attracted you to him to be the next coach of the San Jose Sharks?
Well, 7 years ago when I went through the coaching search, Peter was on the radar then. He was one of our finalists then. The only thing he didn't have at that time was NHL experience. And from that point on, in the last 7 years, he went to Florida, and then he went to New Jersey. And then we decided that we needed to make a change, and it was just time. Peter was a guy that came in that was fit a lot of things that we were looking for, very current with how the game is being played, very bright guy. No fear in making really tough decisions, and he came in, and he's very familiar with a lot of our players. Larry Robinson, who's on our staff, spoke extremely highly of Peter, and it was just a decision that seemed to make sense and fit for us.
And he would have coached against players on your team like Brent Burns in the OHL, Logan Couture as well, the Ottawa 67, so there's a familiarity with those players going back to junior. Speaking of junior, if I can just dovetail with the draft here, and I just got the press release moments ago, Doug, congratulations on signing Timo Meier, your first-round draft pick, to his entry-level contract. He goes in the first, and then you stay in the queue and select Jeremy Waugh, the defenseman, nice skater, nice little defenseman, offensive force from the QMJHL as well. What did you see in your first two picks this year that really turned your head, Timo Meier and Jeremy Waugh?
Well, first of all, coming into this draft, we knew it was a really important year for us, and we ended up walking away from the draft with 10 players this year. We'd been accumulating picks the last couple of years, and we like Timo a lot, the size, the strength, the way he plays the game. He goes to the net. He's got some. He's got a man's body already, but he can play on the inside, but he also has got a really good hockey sense that can play with good players and create offensive there. He plays in all three zones. We really liked him, so we felt picking in the top 10, we'd get a player like him. The guy that really excited us that we made a big move on the second day to move up and get Jeremy is we were trying to move up in the first round in about the 20 to 25 range, and we would have taken Jeremy in that place. When it felt that he was available on the second day, we moved a couple of picks to get the 31 spot. So we feel like we walked away with two first-round picks in these two guys, and it really made our draft for us.
Are you finding, you know, just a little bit more on Timo Meier, are you finding now that, you know, Swiss hockey has sort of come of age? And if so, why has it taken so long? Hockey's been, you know, a great sport in Switzerland for decades.
Well, I think they've committed to really high-end coaches. They've got a really good program in place. I think you're referring to Mirko Mueller, our first-round pick from past years. We think he's going to be a stud. I mean, he's now 6'3", 210. And he is, he's ready to be, I think, a factor on our team. So I think their program, they've got good people that are running it. They've had some players that are coming over here and having success. So it just seems to be that cycle that they're in.
So we talked a lot about young players, which brings us back to a theme with the San Jose Sharks and how it's maybe changed. Because last offseason, you're talking about a rebuild. And this offseason, it seems more like we're going for it a little bit, a Joel Ward, a Paul Martin. Where are the Sharks now? Are we still in sort of a rebuildy thing, or are we more in a going for the cuppy thing right now?
Well, we were crystal clear last summer exactly what we said we were going to do. We used the exact same terminology that the Detroit Red Wings used. We expected to be able to rebuild and compete at the same time. We did the exact same thing in 2003. So we last year after the trade deadline, our team was probably the youngest team in the league. It was a 26.3 average on March 2nd playing against Montreal. So we integrated some younger guys into the team. But make no mistake about it, we expect to make the playoffs and compete every year. So coming into this year, we had some cap space. We added these 10 players that really positions us well for the future. But we expect to compete to make the playoffs and compete to try and compete for the Stanley Cup. So we had cap space, and we were looking for, you know, three real important pieces for us. We wanted to secure a number one goalie who could fit for now and for the future, and that's Martin Jones. He's 25. We know this player well. He's big, competitive, 6'4". We wanted to find a defenseman that would complement, the Burns, Vlasic, Braun, Dillon, and Mueller, hopefully a guy that could actually play with Brent Burns and was a left-shot guy. Paul Martin was at the top of the list on that. He'd played all his years with Chris Letang, played in a winning environment, and played with good players. A lot of our players and our coaching staff knew him well. And then we were looking to get a really quality, versatile veteran who hadn't played a lot of games in the league, and that's Joel Ward. He's only played 517 games in this league. Big, physical, can skate. Pete DeBoer, in particular, loves this player. So we think those guys help us both for now, but they also are really good guys that enhance the growth of our younger players that we've added. So our rebuild was a very simple one, is we want to integrate younger players like Mueller, Hurdle, Nieto, et cetera. But also, while we have the Marlows, the Thorntons, the Burns, the Pavelskis, the Couturers, all these guys in their prime, we expect to compete to win every year. So if there's any confusion, I'm not sure where that came from, because our clarity was the exact same words that Detroit used, and that was our plan. It was a transition year, and now we go forward.
Let's back up to Martin Jones, the netminder, because I believe reading somewhere you said, you know, he's sort of been on your radar for a couple of years, Doug, and, you know, you go back to the history of the San Jose Sharks and the Los Angeles Kings. I think that the only time these two teams have ever made a trade was a couple of fourth-round picks of the draft back in 2008. These two teams don't trade, as you well know, amongst one another. How did the Jones deal come together, knowing that I'm guessing L.A. and San Jose aren't going to get together to do a trade anytime soon?
I think you're probably accurate. I think they moved him to Boston, and when he moved to Boston, I think we looked at an opportunity. We were fairly aggressive with our offer at the draft. They thought we were going to conclude it at the draft. Martin Jones was the guy that we wanted. His age, his history, his junior coach is a guy that we know very well. He played a lot of hockey against our farm team in Worcester when he was with Manchester. Our goalie coaching people loved his style and his size, and felt that he was ready at this age to break through and compete with Alex Stalock and Troy Grosnick that we have here, but we think he's the real deal. So he was the guy that we had targeted. Trying to get him through making a very fair offer to Boston was crucial. Would we be very disappointed sitting here today without him? Yes, the answer would have been yes.
Paul Martin is a defenseman I like a lot, and I think a defenseman that maybe didn't get as much recognition as he deserved in Pittsburgh because of the contract he signed. Was that another Larry Robinson input situation? I know he had him in Jersey for a bit, too. And what did you like about Martin?
Well, we were really inclusive with all our staff. Peter liked him a lot. Peter had just had Brent Burns over in the World Championships, where Burns, he was the most valuable defenseman over there playing with Dan Hamhuis. So we were looking for a guy that's got great hockey sense, that can skate, uses a stick, is a really good, easy partner to play with. And Paul really came to the top of the list that he would fit perfect for Burnsy. So both Larry and Peter were very, very involved in that. A lot of our players knew Paul. Joe Pavelski's played with him a lot. Brent Burns knew him. Alex Stalock, Justin Braun. So he's a guy that, again, hasn't played a lot of games in this league. He's only played 27 more games than Mark Edward Vlasic has. So there's a lot of tread still left on the tire. Really smart player, and we've got a pretty young defense, so he slides in and complements the group extremely well.
Doug, I live in Stouffville, as you well know, a little bit north of the city of Toronto. Just a little bit north of me is a town you well know as well, called Keswick, Ontario. Chris Cherney is from there not that long ago, last week, as a matter of fact, was carrying the Pan Am torch through Keswick. 14 points in his last 18 games. How do you see, or what's the expectation for Chris Cherney next year?
Well, Chris to us is a really important player. When he was with London, we watched him closely, how he played the game, plays in all zones, a really smart player. We brought him up at the beginning of the year last year from Worcester, and he played, you know, 15, 20 games, played really well, didn't get an awful lot of minutes. We sent him back down to Worcester. He played a lot of minutes. He kind of lit it up down there, and he came up later in the year a much more developed player. Played extremely well. Again, really good hockey sense. You know, when you have him playing on a third or fourth line, you often get mismatches against the other team. So he's here at our development camp. He took a big step last year. He's training with Gary Roberts. He's added even more strength to him. So he's an important player for us for now and the future. He's going to have to compete to make the team in September, but if he comes in and plays the way he did at the end of last year, that should take care of that.
Doug, you've got over $25 million in cap space dedicated to four forwards right now, and Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, Logan Couture, and Joe Pavelski. Is it safe to say that those four guys are foundational for this season, or is there still a possibility that you could move one to create a bit more flexibility for the team?
No, I mean, we like where our team is at. We got a great combination of veterans, younger core veterans, you know, and some young guys that we need to step up. So we like the mix where it is. I think our cap space is spread out pretty well, where we have core guys under under longer-term contracts. We have some veterans under shorter-term. We have some younger guys still on entry-level deals, some guys that did some bridge deals. So our players have really helped us in how we've structured our contracts, and you know, we appreciate that. It gave us the room and ability to add the Jones and Martin and Ward. So our players are our partners when we're trying to, you know, build our team. And all I can say is I've talked to every one of our players in the last 7-8 days, and they're all excited. Can't wait to get back here and have a bounce back year.
Doug, last one here, and you would be the most authoritative person to talk about this. You're there as a general manager now. You were there as a player in the first game with the San Jose Sharks. How have you seen, because we're going to see Austin Matthews probably go first overall next season. He's from Phoenix, so that grassroots program has produced an elite-level player. How have you seen hockey at the grassroots level develop in San Jose since you were, a player and now a GM?
Well, it's been incredible, and a lot of the credit goes to Mr. Gund, who first brought this team out here, building rinks. The youth hockey program has created kids that have come through that system and played. There's been first-round picks that have been California-based. To see the outdoor game this past year and the attendance and support to that, our rink here in San Jose is, I think, the largest in the United States west of the Mississippi, so youth hockey is flourishing. And take a look at Anaheim and L.A., what they've done with their youth programs. Hockey is the real deal out here. The fan base has been tremendously supportive. They expect to have good teams every year. But hockey, the growth that not only our fans but our ownership and all the kids, it's at a great place, and it's only going to get stronger going forward.
And
thing too, just to finish on that, is with our AHL Pacific Division this year, where we have five teams in California, it's a huge advantage now for us to have our players in our own footprint. But having five AHL teams out here too is another indicator of the growth of hockey in California.
Yeah. Last one for me. You know, you obviously have your ear to the ground on a lot of this stuff in the off season for other GMs. A lot of people have been selling this offseason as something different than what we've seen before with regard to the potential for offer sheets really driving a lot of the movement that we've seen. Is that sort of just, you know, I mean, is that an uninformed observation from the outside? Is that actually what you've seen happen this offseason? Have the dynamics changed on offer sheets at all?
Well, I mean, I think offer sheets have been around for a while. There's been 34 or 35 of them. We did one a few years ago. It's a mechanism that's in the collective bargaining agreement. I think you'd have to ask those teams that felt they might have been in a position that they felt they were susceptible to that, if that impacted their decisions. You know, we identified a player that we wanted in Martin Jones, and we offered fair value, and I think Don Sweeney did an excellent job getting fair value. But would we have explored other ways of acquiring him? Potentially. You know, we look at players that we want, and whatever's within the rules, if we could go acquire the player that makes us a better team, we would consider that, as we have done that in the past.
Great stuff. Doug Wilson, thank you so much for joining us. Have a
Thanks,
good,
Doug.
Restful summer, sir, because you've had a busy one so far.
Okay, I'll try. But thanks, guys, for taking the time today.
Thanks, Doug.
Ain't
much
no problem.
Appreciated.
Doug Wilson.
Could you imagine if the San Jose Sharks offer sheet a LA Kings goaltender?
Well, I can't. But I also think it's like, listen, man, I sympathize with Sharks fans for a lot of reasons. But, you know, like, we just got done with an offseason in which we were talking about a rebuild, and now we are taking LA's goalie. Or backup goalie. We're signing Joel Ward. We're signing Paul Martin.
But it's not as if the backup goaltender is 33 or the goaltender is 33 years old.
He's not. But it's a nice little aggressive move, don't you think, towards LA?
Oh yeah. Listen, there's no way LA is going to do a deal with the San Jose Sharks. They've never done a deal. Like, there was a swap of fourth round picks, and that's it. It's like Boston and Buffalo just don't do deals. Well, there was a Danny Pie deal, but other than that, you know, there's the free agent compensation for Peter McNabb, but those are the only two that jump to my mind right away. But these two are not making deals with each.
No,
yeah,
never.
I know. Sorry about that. And for Andre
Devils and Rangers don't ever make, hardly ever make deals. Devils and Rangers.
Nope. Oh, nope. That's why.
There's been maybe one or two in history.
Calgary and Edmonton. I mean, the classics, right? They just. I mean, I kind of like it that way because it adds a whole different layer of the hatred dynamic. Between the two squads. But listen, The San Jose Sharks have now the Detroit model is let them overripen in the minors and then, you know, graduate them when they're fully developed. That's starting to change now with Detroit. Right, slowly but sure, there've been a couple of guys, and you started to hear it the last couple of seasons. Well, we're in a pinch. We weren't really ready to call him up in years previous. We'd have left him in GR, but we were strapped, and so we had to call him up. That's always been. I mean, that's that's the model that every team would like, isn't it?
Right.
The model where you can let your guys sit there for another year, maybe even 2 years, until they're ready to join the National Hockey League and not have to rush anybody. But you can only do that for so long, until your high end guys. Just start to wear out, and then by necessity, you do need to rush hockey players. But listen, right. San Jose's not too bad as far as prospects and guys joining the roster. Timo Meier's a really nice pick. Meier's a really nice pick. I mean, I'm sort of hot and cold on Jeremy Waugh as a 5-on-5 defenseman. But if it's a power play game, hey, more power to you. I think
he's also an excellent third line center. Jeremy Waugh also looks like he's about 11, doesn't he? Isn't that the kid that looks like he's like 11 years old?
No, not Jeremy Waugh. You think Jeremy Waugh is a defenseman from the Quebec League?
Am I thinking of somebody else? Probably am.
You might be. I mean, listen, every year at the draft, I look at these guys and they all look like they're 11 years old. But that's not a reflection on them. That's a reflection on how old I'm getting. All right, that's not a reflection on the kids because they're all 17 years old. I just keep getting older by one more year.
I like the Joel Ward signing for him. I like the Paul Martin signing for him. I think this is listen.
Now
the West is very topsy turvy.
Do you look at? Let me focus on the Joel Ward signing. Do you look at the Joel Ward signing and say, well, the last time they had an ox on right wing was Brent Burns,
they haven't had
that since. And, you know, Joel Ward was the best strong, beefy right winger available that they can get their hands
yes,
on.
Yes, but I also think that this is a team that can't win in the playoffs. Much like when the Capitals acquired Justin Williams, it's an acquisition of a player that does well in the playoffs. The Caps didn't want to give Ward the contract he was looking for. The Sharks did. He does well in the postseason. They don't. Makes a lot of sense from that aspect as well.
Yeah. The thing about Sanders. Well, Jose, last year, of course, he didn't make the playoffs, but 2 years ago, I'm sorry, if Antti Niemi makes a save, the Kings aren't coming back and winning four straight. They're on the mat, and all San Jose needed was a save, and they didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. If they would have won the series if Joel Ward was there, obviously, because that's how good he is.
And Martin Jones, of course, yeah. He's clutch.
Right, of course.
Especially in OT.
All right, So we're doing these podcasts maybe once a week, which means that there's a lot of stuff that happens in between them. So forgive us if we're backtracking a little bit, but we weren't here for two big contracts that were signed, and I wanted to get your take on them because one of them involved your boy. Ryan O'Reilly is now a $7.5 million a year cap hit player over 7 years with the Buffalo Sabres. Now, there's two things we have to talk about here. One is the contract itself. I.e. the cap hit, i.e. the value of this player as essentially a second line player, center behind Jack Eichel when Eichel, becomes Eichel. And the second thing, obviously, is what a giant pain in the ass this guy is to try to sign a contract to, in the sense that they finally get him, they finally give him the years, they finally give him the money, and he's like, you know what I'd really like for it all to be just bonus money, just all of it bonus money, if you could.
Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to say who the agent is, but I just got a text back. So I was curious about how the reaction to this around the league. All right? This is about how it's all bonus and, does it count against escrow? And here's this agent. I'll just read you the text. Escrow is withheld on players' salaries and bonuses. So if he gets $10 million on July 1st, the team puts $10 million times the applicable escrow rate into the escrow account on that day.
Ooh. English.
I know. Now we're getting into if I knew I would have to cover sports like this, I would have taken different courses in school territory.
But essentially what it is, beyond the escrow thing here, is a David Clarkson contract. It's to protect it makes it buyout proof basically, which I think is a smart move in the sense that let's say that by year five things aren't going the way they should, as can be the situation on long-term big money deals for players that probably aren't going to put up the points that are commensurate with the salary, it protects him from a buyout from an owner that obviously has enough money to buy him out.
Yes.
In theory.
True. You know what? Go back and read. I read through it once. I should go back and read it again. Did you read Lambert's piece on Ryan O'Reilly and his comparables and, yeah, points per 60 and all that kind of stuff?
I edited it, so I guess I probably did read it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, very good. Editor Puck Daddy blog. That would be you, Greg Wyszynski. The interesting thing about Ryan O'Reilly is that when you project what the Buffalo Sabres are going to be when they actualize as a legitimate playoff team consistently, we all expect it to be Jack Eichel, first line center, Sam Reinhart, second line center, and then let it fall from there. The presence of Ryan O'Reilly down the middle. Well, this is life before Riley. Okay.
Might be life this before is, O'Reilly. Okay.
Life before O'Reilly was.
This
was
is
that.
B-O-R before O'Reilly.
B-O-R before O'Reilly. Yeah. In the year of our Lord, 214 B-O-R. That's what we sort of all expected, and that's why I think it sort of raised eyebrows when Buffalo goes out, and makes the aggressive move, and makes a deal for Ryan O'Reilly. He is the kind of player that. You know, and I'm not saying he's Crosby, and I'm not saying he's Taves, but you need players on certain teams that set a work ethic and set a work rate that the players underneath them are embarrassed not to follow. You know what I mean? Like you need that player that sets that tempo that says, okay, boys, this is how hard we work, and these are the things we do to be successful. And regardless of the contract, I know it's hard in a salary cap world because we're all confronted with it day in and day out. It sits there in our face how price tags are attached to the backs of jerseys whenever we see the players on the ice, to the point where you almost want to see Chiron to see, like, you know, the decimal point floating around with the players as he skates down the ice. But you do, regardless of the money, it's pretty important to have those kind of guys in your room. Like it really is, and teams fall apart when they don't have those guys, the types of guys in the room that initiate a work rate at an elite level. Because let's not forget here, we're still dealing with a lot of kids on the Buffalo Sabres.
So you're saying that Ryan O'Reilly has that work ethic? That he's the kind of guy you want on that roster?
I would take him. I'm sort of biased. I don't know if you've paid much attention to this podcast since we started 4 years ago. Kind of a fan. Kind of a fan of O'Reilly.
Right, of course.
Just a little bit.
I think, listen, the money thing has never been an issue for me with O'Reilly because he signed an offer sheet and Calgary got all boo-boo-faced about the Avs not trading him to the Flames. So they gave him a second year on the offer sheet that was ridiculous, and that's what set his salary course in the National Hockey League. So when that's the floor that you're dealing with, you gave him a little bit of a discount on the next deal, but that's the floor you're dealing with, and 7.5 based off that salary he's already making is not outlandish. It's just the way of the world. I think he's a special player, and I think that he's a special player at center. I've gone back and forth with my good friend Dave Lozo about this, who has, you know, quoted chapter and verse the numbers he's put up on the wing, and he didn't really play center for the Avs. I'm like, well, he was stuck behind Duchesne and Stastny. Like, what do you think they're going to do? I mean, what do you think they're going to do? Reward the guy who tried to leave over the two guys that are like the stars on the team? Of course not. So we've not really seen him get the kind of minutes at center that he'll probably get this year. And going forward with Buffalo. And I think he's a great player. And I think if you look around this league, his type of player, his type of center, his incredible two-way game is the guy that you need on your first or second line to win in this league. Every single team has it. Even teams like the Blackhawks that don't have a discernible second-line center have Jonathan Toews. Now, I'm not saying O'Reilly is Jonathan Toews, but he's kind of like Jonathan Toews in the sense that he has that amazing two-way game.
Yeah, he's not Patrice Bergeron, but he's kind of like Patrice Bergeron.
Exactly. Now you're picking it up. Right. Exactly. So
yeah, every team needs those guys.
I really like the move. I mean, I loved the trade because it essentially is Tim Murray packaging some some pieces they don't need going forward for a player that they really need going forward. I saw somebody say they're no longer listening to the podcast, by the way, because you, Merrick, were so mean to the Avs and mean to Russian players when we discussed this trade.
Really? What did I do?
I think you were really hard on Zadorov, and you were hard on the Avs and the culture of the Avs or something.
Okay, well, why was Zadorov sat down last year?
Listen,
and how did Patrick Roy handle Mikhail Grigorenko last year?
Listen, man, I don't know what to tell you because, okay. I mean, it doesn't matter because that person's not listening anymore.
Right. So I'm just kidding.
We're truly talking about it.
I'll just make sure I only say nice things about everybody at all times.
Unfollow.
Everything's great and everyone's awesome.
That's the greatest thing about Twitter, by the way. The idea that someone will unfollow you to try to change your behavior. But, like, if you're not unfollowing me, how do you ever see that I'm changing my behavior for you?
Welcome to the new world. Welcome to 2015.
Time is a flat circle. Ryan O'Reilly contract being what it is, the other big contract, obviously, well, there's two other big contracts. The other one that we'll talk about now is Brandon Saad. Now, Brandon Saad gets his big fat contract from the Columbus Blue Jackets. What did you think of the deal for B-Saad and the Jackets?
What a great move for Columbus. What an outstanding move for the Columbus Blue Jackets. And now we'll have a decade of Ryan Johansson and Brandon Saad beside each other. Like, Johansson was blessed. Get all the junior hockey. I'm going all Peter McGuire on you. You know, he was blessed to play with Nino Niederreiter with the Portland Winterhawks, and that line with Brad Ross on the other side just shot the lights out in the Western Hockey League. And Ryan Johansson's time with Columbus at times has been prickly. But the last couple of seasons, thank you very much. He's shown that he's ready to take that next step and be that number one elite level center, one of those next batch of elite level centers in the NHL. And now he's got Saad with him. Like, if you're a Pittsburgh Penguins fan, that's frightening. Because I'm sorry, Pittsburgh, but Columbus is coming for you. What you gonna do? Because now you have Brandon Saad to deal with. I mean, Marco Dano's a nice prospect. I'll also take Brandon Saad any day of the week. What did you think of the deal? I love Saad on the Columbus Blue Jackets. To me, as much as, you know, if you're the Blue Jackets, if you're gonna have the year out of the playoffs, you want it to be really bad, and so you're into the Eichel Connor McDavid lottery. But, you know, coming out of that entire situation this year with Zach Werenski and Brandon Saad, you've kind of done all right.
We saw four mega deals, okay, as far as contracts go.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Tarasenko in a second, but in the case of O'Reilly, in the case of Tarasenko, I think that the money that they're getting is for their accomplishments. I think you can look at their body of work and say, okay, we know what we got here. We're confident about it. They've earned it, and we're going to pay them, and we're going to keep them, and if we want to keep them, we have to pay them. I think then you go to Brandon Saad and Dougie Hamilton and the money they're going to make, and the Hamilton contract's really good for the Flames, no doubt. And I think aren't those two contracts more less about what's been accomplished and more about potential, true or false?
Ooh, I don't know. I think, well, with no, I think with both they're based on where those players are at right now. And the minute John Tavares bumped into Zdeno Chara, that was a moment of opportunity for Dougie Hamilton to establish himself as a first pairing legit defenseman in the NHL, and he demonstrated as such. And
this year, has to round out his game a little bit, though, doesn't he? Fully formed.
Well, I mean, just think he's going to have more experience. Like, he's not going to turn into a crusher back there.
No,
that's not going to be Dougie Hamilton's game. He's like, oh, we want more physicality out of the big
there's
boy.
Only,
that's
there's
not that's not his game.
Literally, only been one player named Dougie in this league that's been physical. That's a fact. If your name is two, actually, if you know what, he might be the only Dougie that's not physical. Dougie Brown was physical. Dougie Gilmore was physical. Who else? Was Dougie Huda? Did they call him Dougie Harvey? I don't know. Did they?
I just love the fact that his parents didn't call him Doug. They called him Dougie.
Dougie.
And his brother's name, the San Jose prospect's name, isn't Fred, it's Freddie.
Freddie. Dougie
Both
Freddie.
Dougie and Freddie. Both parents, by the way, elite level athletes in their sports. Yeah. So he comes from good stock.
And
with Brandon Saad, I mean, by the end of the playoffs, we're talking about, you know, you mentioned foundational players with Doug Wilson and some of those Shark squads. Weren't we saying, like, that Brandon Saad has now taken his spot on the Blackhawks roster as being as important as these other guys that are there? And they're going to have to get rid of a guy like Patrick Sharp because Saad is so important to them.
When I talked about Brandon Saad being a foundational player, I was more thinking about the foundation going forward.
Like, so, I don't think okay. That, maybe, I don't maybe, think, maybe yeah, here's 20, the way, maybe here's the way you put
it. 23 and 29 last year is great. That's great. 19 and 28 the previous year is great. Very solid, solid player and room for growth. That's why I think he's worth the money in the sense that he's got the potential to be even better. But that said, you take him off that Blackhawks team. Are they effed now? Like, they can't win now? I mean, he's not that much of a foundational player where you pull it out and the building collapses, right?
That's true.
Okay.
No, that's true. I think maybe the way to put it is there are two players whose best years are still ahead of them.
Yes, thank you. Okay, but that's what I'm saying. Is that like
that's simple?
O'Reilly, you're buying it. You know what's under the hood.
But we're not like,
you're buying it, and you know what's under the hood, and you're excited that could even go faster. Saad and Hamilton.
I think you're
wagering that they're gonna grow into these roles. I mean, you know, Dougie's never been the number one defenseman for more than a minute when his other guys in the team are hurt. Brandon Saad is a top line player, but he's never been a top line player without Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa on his line.
But it's not like you just got a phone call from your financial investor saying, "Hey, we got this sheet under our nose the other day saying that there's gold up in those hills, but they don't have a shovel in the ground yet. We think that there is, and if there is, you could make a lot of money, but there's no guarantees." I don't think we're at that point with these players. I think the shovels are in the ground. I think the picks are in the ground already, and we kind of know what's in there.
You kind of do, but sometimes you can end up with more than you think, and then you wind up being a crazy old man with a beard doing a jig and drinking moonshine. I've seen enough of those movies to know exactly how that can go.
Well, that's a fair point. Okay,
it's true.
They told me that Brandon Saad was worth all the 14 karat gold in all these hills. Oh, by the way, Essa, thank you very much. Freddie Hamilton, now a Colorado prospect.
Oh. Yeah, obviously your abs hate continues. You don't even pay attention to their transactions.
Oh, I know, of course. There was some talk, too, the Calgary was looking at bringing in F. Hamilton.
Ugh.
I know.
Great. Nepotism. Hey. Worked really well for
Keep
Carolina.
Keep your brother happy. Hey, who did Buffalo sign? Do you see this one? Sliding this one under the radar?
Oh, you mean Cal O'Reilly?
That's right. Who's going to play center on Utica next year? Everyone's gone. Hey, Vancouver, you got some issues down the middle. You might want to carry more than 46 contracts. Anyway, where are we at now, Wish?
We mentioned Tarasenko, so let's talk about Tarasenko. 8 years, $60 million, 23-year-old winger. Let me tell you about Tarasenko because he talked to Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today, and I friggin' love it. Listen to these lines from Tarasenko. "It's not about the money. This is about your personality, how you can talk to the guys, how you can help the guys. I think money is important, but in leadership terms, this is nothing. You can sign a $50 million contract in 1 year, but teammates can hate you. I work hard the last 3 years to make the leadership group. My teammates, my coach, my general manager trust me. I will try to make them happy." I love this kid! Oh, my God. What 23-year-old goes like this? What 23-year-old has the foresight to be like, you know what? I'm going to sign a deal where I could buy an island. So I know people are going to straight up hate me. So let me kind of lay the groundwork here with these boys, these old guys, David Backes, who I'm going to outrank in about a year. Let me just lay down the groundwork with these cats, see that I'm a good dude. I'm not some crazy flaky Russian like Radulov making a bunch of coin. And then I'll make my coin, and then we'll be cool. We'll be boys. That's brilliant. Yeah.
You know, for a lot of players coming out of entry level, a $60 million deal, to your point, will bring scorn from just about every single corner of the hockey world. But with Tarasenko, I think you can count on one hand the amount of people that can sell tickets individually. And Tarasenko, because the deal comes out and everyone kind of goes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's cool. We're fine with that. Because we've seen Tarasenko do things on the ice. And a couple of teams have been really torched by him. I mean, he's made highlights dancing through guys like elite level, I shouldn't say elite, but big time legitimate veteran NHL defensemen have been made to look very bad by Vladimir Tarasenko. I think the fact that we've seen him do some spectacular individual things we kind of say to ourselves, yeah, this kid really is special. Like, if they just put up the same amount of points but didn't make highlight reels, would we be feeling the same way?
Probably not, but he's a special. He's clearly a special player.
I agree.
And he's also, like you said, he's a meal ticket. He's a headliner. Yeah.
He's a player that's exciting as hell. And so is that entire line with Schwartz and Laterra. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite lines, and a lot of people's favorite lines in the entire NHL.
And again, this can't be stressed enough. He's been able to do this playing for Ken Hitchcock.
Good point. Great freaking point. Yes, he has. It's a very good point, Greg. Yeah.
Speaking of players who had their offensive spirit crushed by Ken Hitchcock, TJ Oshie traded to the Capitals with Greg Brouwer.
Right side just got pretty good there.
Dude, I was just talking to somebody who covers the Caps the other day, and that has been through the Caps wars with me through the years. The idea that within a week, okay, the Capitals let Mike Green walk and let Joel Ward walk and traded Troy Brouwer. These are a lot of moves that would not have been made by George McPhee. All due respect to George McPhee, who I love. But these are kind of like, this is the lack of loyalty is really what makes this thing work. And you need that in this league, and they no longer have it. Oshie and Justin Williams are exponentially better on the wing than were Brouwer and Ward.
I do love Troy Brouwer, though. I know what you mean. It's an upgrade. You're right. It is an upgrade. It is a little bit easier to let players go that aren't yours. Mm-hmm. Right? General managers always fall in love with their guys. So why I brought them in. And that's why George McPhee, that's why you'd say, oh, there's a shelf life on a lot of these guys. And it's rare that a GM, can admit a mistake and move on from a guy. But so many GMs, like, it wouldn't have happened under George McPhee because Mike Green was George McPhee's guy. Mm-hmm. Right, you look at who made these acquisitions.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though, is that with Brian McClellan, the thought was that maybe these guys would be his guys too, because he was second in command under McPhee, and so when he took over the job, I remember being on, I think I was on Fire Island here in New York. It was like summertime. It was like beach time. I remember the report coming down. Oh, the Caps have named a new general manager. I'm like, oh, this is very exciting. Who's it going to be? Like, is it going to be like Ray Shearer or somebody? Or whoever was available at the time. And they're like, oh, it's this guy who was already in the organization. I'm just like, oh, what? Come again with this? This never looking outside the organization BS nepotism. And he wound up being a really good GM so far, I think.
Yeah, 100%. But it's always more interesting when it's the assistant general manager that takes over the general manager position, because there's not a huge learning curve. You really already know the organization and you hit the ground running. You just have a different title and you have different powers.
Right.
That works a lot smoother than when an assistant coach becomes a head coach. Right. Like, that dynamic is a smart one, because you know the organization inside and out at every single level. And as the assistant general manager, what do you know generally better than the GM? What you have in the minors.
Right.
You know your farm system. You know the guys that are close. So, not saying that, Brian McClellan didn't have to do a lot of heavy lifting or a lot of heavy thinking, but it is a little bit easier, and the transition tends to go a little smoother.
But?
What?
No, there's no but, really. I just like the way you said but there. I liked your but, Merrick.
Thanks, man. I've been doing a lot of squats. I've been doing a lot of squats, a lot of lunges this summer, really working on my backyard.
Two things.
Taking care of myself.
Oh, while we're talking about the Caps, your thoughts on Kuznetsov doing the bridge deal, and that kind of ties into an email that we got. We're going to be going postal today, but here's the email from Matthew C. What are your thoughts on bridge deals? Are they still going to be useful, or will they be a thing of the past? Initially, I thought the Tarasenko contract might be high, but after thinking about what happened with PK Subban, it looks pretty good. I'm curious about how Calgary's cap will suddenly rise in the next couple of years after how low it was this year. Oh, the Calgary's cap is going to be – they're going to be a cap team. They have to be. With what they have with the players they have to sign, they have to be. But that's a blessing of riches. Any Flames fan would take that in a millisecond over what they had a few years ago.
Have we now changed our thinking on the Calgary Flames? Are they still the test case for the analytics outlier team? Like, are they from Minnesota 3 years ago, the Leafs 2 years ago, and Colorado a year ago? Did we talk about this last podcast?
Are we still saying
like, uh-oh, here they come. Here comes the big crash. Or have they done enough to insulate from said crash?
We did talk about it last time, and I think that we both felt that they might not be the crash team because they were set up better defensively and they have better coaching. Was the thoughts that we've had.
Okay.
So I think it's possible. Bridge deal, though.
Yeah.
Because Kuznetsov goes for the two-year, two-over-six deal with the Capitals. And again, like I don't think bridge deals are going away. I think that clearly the wind is blowing towards locking up your younger players for as long as you can for the right cap hit. For a guy like Kuznetsov, like there's no reason to sign a long-term deal with the Capitals at this point because you're coming off a rookie season, because you know your stats are going to jump the better you get, the more ice time you get as the second-line center. And for the Capitals, there's no reason to go long-term with them either because you want flexibility because you're dealing with a pretty veteran team that has a window to win now, and you have other considerations coming down the pike. So you're still going to see bridge deals, but they're going to be very situational. Because I do think, though, to answer your general question, the wind's definitely blowing in the let's lock up the young guys as long as we can direction.
And if you're Kuznetsov, your point is the right one, because you never want to lock in long term until you're at or as close to your highest earning potential.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a 3 million guy right now and you think inside you're a 6 million guy, why are you locking in now?
Yeah, why
are you? Don't lock in now. And listen, you're going to get plenty of opportunity playing second line center behind Nicholas Backstrom with the Washington Capitals. Not draw top assignment and pad your stats. Mm-hmm. Not a bad situation to be in.
Not a bad situation at all. Two quick things before we get to going postal for a little bit. Are you able to do? Do you have a time you got to leave, or are you good?
I don't know, like 3:30. How's that for you?
Well, shit, man.
You want to do more?
We'll leave before 3:30. I'll tell you that right now.
We will, eh? Oh, okay.
I'm a superstar celebrity. I don't have time to do all this.
I'm just gonna go for a run. That's all I do now. I just do my workouts. I do my runs.
Let me tell you about my off season, by the way. So far, so they have me
What's
still
your
doing.
They have me doing
video stuff. Yahoo. But it is bridging over into general sports as well as hockey. So today,
what? Hang on.
What?
You're doing other sports?
I have varied interests. Okay, sir.
Whatever. I understand it, and it does feel a little bit weird. And I should understand that people can grow, but it's always weird when you have someone like, I mean, you and me are pretty much, you know, specialized in hockey. Now, whenever I do sort of open line, if I go and fill in for someone on Sportsnet 590, and I'll have to do, like, if I'm talking about, I don't know, like the next UFC card,
right?
I get the weirdest tweets about, shut up, you're the hockey guy. Oh, you know what I get? When I first started doing hockey, it was, why should we listen to you? You're the wrestling guy.
The wrestling guy,
actually,
right.
I still get that to this day.
Right.
You're the guy who covers wrestling. Why doesn't Yahoo get you doing movie reviews, bud?
I would love
that. That'd be right up your alley.
It really would. But everything is very sort of compartmentalized. Thank you.
Wow.
Jersey accent.
Greg is testing out his new tongue today. He just got one in the mail last week.
Oh, it's a sturdy tongue. So it's hard to do that sort of like crossing over to the other departments thing here because. Yeah. It's like they have their own people doing things, and, you know, Yahoo Sports is paying me to do sports. The thing that's funny about it is that, like, before I ever wrote hockey, like, as my central focus, I was a general sports columnist, and I worked for a newspaper covering all sports. That's why they sent me to the Olympics in the summer to do all of the sports that no one really else is covering, because I covered, you know, fencing, and I covered weightlifting and boxing, you know, before I became a hockey writer.
That's what I did in Beijing in 2008.
Right.
You know what my title was for CBC
what?
That year for the
what?
Games? Beijing Various. You know,
right.
Other people have, like, you know, gymnastics, Beijing, you know, track and field, Beijing swimming. I was Beijing Various.
Yeah, and being so various is great. Because
modern pentathlon.
Yeah, and that I love that, because when I did London, like, I was able to go cover the archery at Lord's cricket stadium. And then
Hang on. I did archery as well in Beijing, and I saw And I'm not sure if he won gold. I know he knocked out the Canadian in the quarter or the semifinal. He's a Russian archer. You're never going to believe that this name is true because it sounds just like a Bond villain. Uh-huh. Go look it up. 2008. I believe he was Russian. I think he was Russian. Look it up, folks. His name was, oh, I love this, Bear Badenov.
Wow.
Yeah, man. I covered Bear Badenov, yo, in 2008.
I did. So I did archery, and that was great, especially because it was right around when the Hunger Games was hot. So that was like the easiest story to write. And then I did boxing. I did steeplechase equestrian. I did fencing. And of course, best of all, for some reason, I don't know how I won the lottery on this one, but I did beach
table
volleyball.
Tennis.
Beach volleyball.
Oh, you're kidding me.
It was the beach.
I remember, Elliot in 2008 for us at CBC, he was, I think, because Elliot was, you know, sort of one of the senior guys, and they had asked him what sport he wanted to cover, and he chose beach volleyball. He ended up doing track and field, ended up doing the 100, because the person who was supposed to do the 100 got sick and couldn't make the trip over to China. I remember talking to Frege on the flight over to Beijing. I'm like, so what are you doing? He just puts his arm back and stretches out his legs. It's beach volleyball. Yeah.
So they had me doing – I did a video debates today with Kevin Kaduk, who is the Yahoo blog editor and also was the editor for Big League Stew, the baseball blog. We did Do You Like the Home Run Derby, Your Favorite Off-Season Injury, and should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? Now, listen. These are topics that I actually care about. There's a lot of, like, I watch those ESPN shows where they have to have an opinion about the most myopic things about, like, the NBA, and I just like, ugh, I couldn't muster up enough caring to talk about, like, the fifth guy on the bench getting signed by another team. But I care about, like, big topics, and I certainly care about everything NFL because it's my second favorite sport as a Jets fan. Patrick M. says I should be known as General Daddy, and Ryan Project says that I should change my name to General Ball Daddy. And Essa Peterson writes in, why should we listen to you? You've never even laced up the fencing shoes. That's true. I've never fenced. I've run, and I've been punched in the face. And
so you can cover boxing,
right?
You can punch the face and cover boxing,
right? And I've lifted a weight, and I've ridden.
So you can do
well, have
yeah,
I ever ridden
good.
A horse? I've been on a pony. So I guess
well,
I
your dad,
you
spent up the formative years of your life at the track with your dad. So you should be able to do equestrian, right? So
one might say those formative years will continue tomorrow with one Sean Leahy. Why it's what happens when there's no podcast. Okay, two more things. We'll start on the serious one and then get to the more whimsical one. Helene Elliott has called on the Los Angeles Kings to cancel Slava Voynov's contract. And here's the thing. Whether or not you think that this is the right decision for the Los Angeles Kings, I think Katie Flynn's piece for Pension Plan Puppets yesterday hit the nail on the head, which is that because they've decided to take that tact with Mike Richards, and as we've said many times in this podcast, please do not simply judge the Mike Richards situation based on what you know or what you think you know, because there's a lot more to it. But that aside, you cancel one contract because of XYZ, and you don't cancel the other contract when he pled no contest to what he played no contest for and did jail time. I think they've painted themselves in a corner. I don't know how they don't terminate Voynov's contract based on the morality clause, having already done so for another contract, which, for whatever reason, fine, they've got their reasons, but ultimately one of the reasons is economic.
And then you know what? You face the legal challenge, fight it. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you know you're fighting the quote-unquote good fight in that situation. Mm-hmm. You're fighting for, you're standing up for what is right in that situation.
Yeah.
So you can get the legal challenge from Camp Voynov. Oh, it's an illegal termination of my contract. That's fine. We'll see you in court. Mm-hmm. It's one of those where ethics trumps economics and where ethics trumps wins.
There is something to be said for I've read this thought in a few places, and this is uncharted territory in some ways for the league and for a lot of us insofar as what went down with Voinov. And I've read that there are studies and there are articles written that terminating the contract ends up being worse for their family than anything else because it puts the victim in danger. And I think that we have to be wary about that. We have to be cognizant of that. And I think that the Kings have to do everything they possibly can to make sure that she's safe and that she's supported in whatever decision they make. But then it becomes a very challenging situation, which is it more important to take a stand against Voinov and his ilk by making this move and showing the consequence of their actions? Should the onus be on that? And it's a tough question to answer when the victim's well-being could be risked by terminating his contract.
Specifically when the victim wants to stay with him.
No, that's
when the
too.
Victim has chosen to stay with him.
Hey, listen, you know, I didn't find the end result of it. For some reason, it's been difficult to find. But during the great Sergei Zubov debate about his Hall of Fame credentials, there was a domestic violence situation with Zubov.
There was?
There was.
No way, I didn't know that.
You could look it up. Late 1990s, I think there was a situation involving a knife. And
whoa.
Again, this
whoa.
Is way in the past and obviously hasn't, you know, followed him through hockey if you didn't really know about it. But there wasn't, like, the same level of repercussion that Voinov will probably face. I mean, it's obviously every situation's its own thing, but I don't know. It's a situation none of us want to have to deal with, and obviously a situation the Kings never want to deal with. But the bottom line for the Kings is, I agree with Helene. You terminate Richards, you have to terminate Voinov, and you also have to terminate Voinov because you've treated the situation as if it's a nuisance. You let him practice. You let the NHL have to carry the load of suspending the guy for the charges, and you're just suspending him because he got hurt training. I mean, it's like, come on already with this, with the Kings.
Patrick sends in the tweet, the NHL is, quote, conducting its own investigation, which is a good sign. They might be the ones taking final action.
Can they, though?
Don't know. I really don't.
I don't. I think the NHL essentially wants... I think the NHL essentially wants this to be a local issue, don't you?
In what sense?
Like, don't you? Well, in the sense that they took league action on a league level, because they had to because of Ray Rice. Okay, that's why they took action on a league level because they clearly didn't when Varlamov had his situation. I think essentially when it comes to the termination of contracts, they want to keep that local. Because the potential is there for there to be collusion, right?
Okay, so they want that to be decided at the team level. They don't want that to be in the office of the America's office level.
Correct. I think essentially the NHL will want to pass the buck and not have it be a situation where they say, you can't play in this league anymore. That'd be astounding if they did. That'd be the NHL gets hit left and right with charges of not caring about their women fans and Bettman being oblivious to sexism in the game. I mean, you want to strike a blow for the side of good and right, you make that decision, but I don't think they will. I think they'll pass that to the Kings.
Yeah, maybe. Or you just assume that LA has no choice and they have to terminate the contract, so you're just happy to lay it at their feet.
June 8th, 1998. Stars defenseman Sergei Zubov was arrested early yesterday in Coppell, Texas, on charges of assaulting his wife. Zubov, 27, was charged with aggravated assault and family violence, a second-degree felony. Coppell police said they went to Zubov's house at 3 a.m. after someone at home dialed 911 and hung up. They determined that Zubov had exhibited a deadly weapon, which police did not identify. It was a knife. And they took him into custody. The player was released sometime yesterday, a department dispatcher said. That was 98. Obviously, much different time.
Yeah.
That's just it. I poked around because I honestly didn't remember it either. I was in college at the time. I wasn't really, you know, as tuned into everything as I am now. And I couldn't really find it. Like, it's not readily available, at least where I was looking, where this whole thing went. And this isn't, I mean, listen, the last thing I want to do is turn this into a thing. But I am sort of interested in seeing how situations like this have been handled in the past. And we all know that had they happened today, a myriad of different situations would be different than the way they turned out.
Oh, yeah, 100%. With some of the superstar players from the past and the not-too-distant past as well.
Yep. Martin writes, and final word on Voinov will come from ICE immigration. Will he keep his visa? That's a good point. And as we wrote about yesterday on Puck Daddy, the KHL's ready to cushion his fall. I know the KHL's made some noise about maybe not taking him back. It's BS. His team will take him back in a heartbeat. He'll be a conquering hero for that team and for that league. Anytime they get a player of his renown to come back there, they're going to take it. Don't think for a second he's not going to have a home in the KHL if he can't play in the NHL.
Yep. I'll take a help spot.
The happier story. Do you believe Phil Kessel? Do you believe Phil Kessel used to walk across town to buy a hot dog?
Saw that. Finding out where the hot dog vendor in question was, and whether his apartment was like at what Bay and up on Bay Street, and Steve was writing about a hot dog vendor on Front. Maybe it was he went to the hot dog vendor after practice on his way home. I don't know. I don't really follow
and again,
the
Pension Plant Puppets does some heavy legwork here. All you had to do was just look at the what we saw on 24/7 and kind of pinpoint where that condo was based on what you could see.
Didn't they find out too that he was like listed in the phone book?
Yeah, they did. Which is the most Phil Kessel thing that's ever Kesseled, isn't it?
Jean Béliveau was listed in the phone book like during like the heyday of the Montreal. Up until his final few years, he was always not just a public figure by way of showing up everywhere, but like his number was right there. You want to talk to Jean Béliveau? Just look up his number in the phone book and give him a call. Chances are he will be the one. Like when I was producing open line shows, and we always try to get Béliveau as a guest. You'd think like, oh, you have to go through a bunch of hoops. You got to go through Montreal Canadiens public relations. No, you just call up Jean, and he would answer the phone. Hello, I say, hey, Jean, it's so and so from the radio station. Can you come on at 2:15 today? Let me see. Let me check. And you can hear him like thumbing through his black book. Okay, I can do it. I'll call in. What's the number? And like, he was the easiest guy to book in the world. He was just like so wonderfully just like. And I remember asking about it once, and he said, I played hockey in the NHL. Like, I never really had to, these people came and watched me, and I'm glad they still want to talk to me. It's been a long time since I played in the NHL.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we had Brent call all the Doug Wilsons in San Jose before getting the right one.
Shot at Brent. Wow.
All right. Let's do some going postal. Brent, do you have the music for
you
that?
You want to do a mailbag segment?
Hey! It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Whoa, not that deep.
We are nutting up for each other here.
Now's your chance to ask Merrick and Wyshynski anything, and we mean anything.
You got your thinking, Took?
Vegan cooking tips. Favorite Doctor Who characters. What's the best bar in Stouffville? Is there a bar in Stouffville? The meaning of life. Wait, let's not get carried away with that.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. On Twitter at Jeff Merrick and at Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Kevin Moriarty wants us to talk about the Derek Stepan situation. Well, let's talk about it. He's the number one center in this league, and he should be paid.
Ryan O'Reilly money. He's going to
Get
Ryan O'Reilly money.
I think he'll get Brandon Saad money. I think 6.5 is the neighborhood where he should be.
I'm saying 7 to 7.5.
Oh my God! I don't know.
Yep.
How long
is
the contract? Eight years?
Sure, 8 years.
You go seven over
I'm
eight
not,
for Derek
Stepan. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying that's what I think he's going to get.
But do you think it's right?
Nope.
6.5 is right.
I'm cool with 6.5. I'm totally fine with it. I know it's funny for a player like Derek Stepan. You add that normally it's like $1 million either way, $4 or $5 million player. But for this player, 6.5 just seems really right, and 7.5 just makes your head explode.
Seems a little bit much. Doesn't it, though?
Hey, can I ask you a... I know it does. Hey, can I ask you a pop culture question?
Oh, my God. What is there? Is there a full moon?
I don't even know if I'm going to pronounce it right, but I saw the video this morning. Should I know the name Ariana Grande? And am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, you should. She is our latest pop songstress. She has a vocal range that has been compared to a young Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
And she's great. She has a lot of hit songs right now.
So
why do you ask? What video did you see?
If I'm to read this correctly, well, it's a couple of stills that I saw. She licks donuts and hates Americans.
In theory, she's very tiny. She could fit in your pocket.
Okay.
She likes to wear. She wears cat ears a lot when she's performing. She's fine. Vivian likes one of her videos that takes place in space, and it's sort of like a Barbarella thing or like a John Carter of Mars thing. And at one point, she shoots rockets out of her boobs, and Vivian always giggles at it. And I don't even know how to approach that as a parent. Yeah.
Okay, because there's some video of her licking donuts and saying she hates America and hates Americans. Is she American though?
Yeah, she is. Wait,
well, what gives?
Let me look this up.
Yeah.
Where did you see this, by the way? Where did you see this?
I don't know. It showed up on my Twitter feed this morning, retweeted by someone.
Ariana Grande apologizes for "I hate America" statement in donut video.
Okay.
Well, why did she say? All right, hang on. Now I got to read this crap. Because of you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm entertained. Greg.
I don't like admitting this, but I wasn't really cognizant of the donut thing until you mentioned it. So you actually knew something pop culture before I did.
Oh yes, nailed it. Pop singer licking donuts. I'm on that.
You had no idea who she was.
Oh, I saw a picture of her licking donuts. Come on, that's all I need.
Let's see here. Donut video.
Hang on. This goes to prove, ladies and gentlemen, I've always talked about this on this podcast. It is your job at the end of the day to stay alive, because if you do, you will see some really crazy shit. Like, little pop singer licks donuts and says she hates Americans. Caught on video.
She hated
Americans. Will destroy career.
And she said that, and she apologized for it in a statement. That's always a thing that's good. Saying that she loves America. Because then everybody on social media was like, you better love America. America made you rich. Okay. Let's see. She was kissing one of her backup dancers and then appeared to lick donuts.
Yep.
And then she said, and then shortly after that she said, I hate Americans. I hate America, after an employee brings out a fresh tray of donuts. All right.
This is happening around us.
So, yeah, you should know who Ariana Grande is.
I should know who she is? Okay.
Yeah, you should. Ryan Becker has two questions. First is about a movie that I saw last night that I would give a B- to. Was the romantic dialogue in Terminator Genesis as bad as Attack of the Clones or worse? It was not as bad, but not good. And Jake Courtney's a terrible actor. And he's totally miscast, and any semblance of chemistry that he would have with Emilia Clarke doesn't exist. Ryan then asks a question that Merrick would care about. How much is Kyle Okposo worth when he gets a new contract? Do you think they'll trade him, by the way? Do you think he's a movable asset for the Islanders?
Oh, he's totally movable. Who wouldn't want to play like Kyle Okposo on their team?
But you think they will trade him?
Oh,
I don't see any reason to, unless it's economic.
No way, man. A guy like him, I know the movement is now more towards these smallish, speedier players, but one of the rarest commodities in the NHL is the power forward. And you got a great one on the island. Why would you even entertain the idea of getting rid of him? Unless he wants out, he's going to be difficult about it. But
right.
I think the world of that player.
Brad in Minneapolis writes in, Mike Riley signs with the Wild over the Blackhawks. If you were in his shoes, let's neglect the hometown roots angle. Where would you have signed from a depth perspective, assuming he wants to slide into a bottom-pairing second power play role? Also, any takes on the uptick in this college draft pick to free agency thing that's happening more and more, i.e. Jimmy Hayes?
Yeah, I think they'll try to close that off.
Yeah, I think so, too. Right. Oh, yeah. It ends up affecting the draft, which is where the NHL wants all the talent to be filtered.
There's so many general managers just like throw. I mean, Zach Hyman's another one, right? You look at him and how he sort of forced the hand of Florida in a lot of ways. Before
Justin Schultz.
There's another one. What was the first question?
Where would you have signed if you were Mike Riley? Were you Mike Riley?
I would have done the right thing, and I would have signed with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's right.
There you go. It's right. Do that. So you're looking at... Well, you know what I would have signed? You know what I would have tried to make some noise? Buffalo Sabres. Buffalo Sabres.
Buffalo.
Not everybody, I mean. But, I mean, if you're looking for that... If you're looking for a spot, you know, they just let go of Nikita Zadorov.
Mm-hmm.
Eichel's there, looking good. They're looking good for the future.
The Eichel effect, obviously, is what you're talking about. Brian Montgomery writes in, more total goals this year, Milan Lucic, Riley Smith, or Matt Beleski, Jimmy Hayes? That's a great question. I would go Beleski and Hayes, wouldn't you? Only because I don't trust Riley Smith.
Who are they going to play Riley Smith with? Nick Bjugstad?
Probably.
You expecting a big year out of Nick Bjugstad? Because I am.
So you go Smith and Lucic? Acknowledging that the Lucic on the Kings, what are you expecting out of him?
I don't know, man. That's a weird spot for him too. But the thing is, they're not a foot speed team, so things could work out just fine for
right.
Lucic on the LA Kings. I mean, Gavrik is the exception, but they're not. A quick
bunch
skating
of,
squad.
Bunch of burners, yeah. I would take Beleski and Hayes in that one. 20 and 20, yeah. Lucic and Smith maybe 20 and 15.
You always wonder about the player in the first year of the big contract with Matt Beleski, mm-hmm. his first year ringing the bell. Jimmy Hayes, and again, maybe thankfully this works out for him because he's not the fastest of foot either. And either are the Boston Bruins.
I just think that, like, if Krejci's healthy, it's hard not to see Beleski scoring at least 20 with Krejci.
Yeah, I always do wonder about the first year with the contract, though. That's my, and again, it's the one year, the one big year that he had. He had the one big season, rings the bell, pressure to perform. I don't know. I'll take Riley Smith with my cats.
Smith and Lucic. Yep. Justin Ritzel writes in, hey guys, do you think Anaheim has done enough so far this offseason to improve their odds of advancing to the Cup final next season? Hagelin and Bjeksa are both good additions, but aren't necessarily improvements over the players they're replacing. Paul McLean might end up being their biggest catch in the end. Yeah, McLean's
hang on,
great.
Hang on, do you think that, who do you like better, Carl Hagelin or Emerson Edom?
I like Hagelin
an improvement?
Than Edom.
You do, eh? Yeah.
I think he's comparing Hagelin to Beleski, though. In which case, that's still an improvement.
I love Carl Hagelin. You just wonder when the hands are going to catch up to the feet.
Right. And the feet are there, and that's all you really
need. Oh, yeah. But Kevin
and then
Bjeksa for Beauchemin. I'll take Beauchemin. Although, Bjeksa's a clutch guy. Jesus. Bjeksa just fits so well in that blue line. Beauchemin just fits so well in that Anaheim blue line.
Beauchemin was a better fit, but I kind of agree with you. Like, when you think about the cup, and you think about the kind of wars this team needs to wage in the postseason, I might want to be in that foxhole with Bjeksa before Beauchemin.
Yeah, Beauchemin was there in 2007.
So was Pronger. Come on now.
So is Jackman and Huskins and Joe DePenta.
Yeah, no one really talks about that. Andy McDonald. No one really talks about those things. Louis Terranova writes, in huge fan of the show, my question as a fellow New Jersey and a Devils fan, what's your view of Ray Shiro taking it slow this summer and working to completely rebuild the forward core of the team with a plan that's seemingly going to take 3 years or more? Also, in your opinion, how long will it be before the Devils are back in the postseason? I would say about 3 years. Also, I want them to tank. I don't even want them to try. I don't want to, like, I know people have to pay for season tickets and the whole thing, and they have to try to put on a good show for everybody so they don't feel like they're being cheated. I want them to go 0-82 this year. I don't want to see a damn thing from this team that even resembles winning. They need a year like that.
So you want Austin Matthews on the New Jersey Devils next year?
Anybody in the top five this year is going to be a foundational player. So
there's some really good players. I know.
Yes,
I know.
it's a deeper draft than this year's was. And this year's draft was bananas. So, yes, please do tank.
Well, Austin Matthews, you could have made the case he would have gone second overall if he were available this year. Jacob Chychrun, the defenseman. Jesse Puljujärvi from Finland. Max Jones and Matthew Tkachuk, now both the London Knights. Like, there's some frickin' players, man. There's some really nice players this year. Yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
As good as this year's, no, I know. Logan Brown's a nice player. We haven't even talked about players like Sam Steele, the rookie from Regina. Like, there's some good, just some sweet ass players coming up, boy. Julian Gauthier is the one that I like from Valdor.
Yeah.
There's some good players.
That's right.
There's some good players.
So tank this year.
They may not have any choice.
Well, the problem is that they do, but here's the problem with tanking. The great equalizer in any plan to tank, of course, is that if you have actually good players, and unfortunately for the Devils, their best player is a goalie that will prevent them from losing games and win games.
Yeah, Buffalo and Edmonton didn't have that problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And whenever Buffalo did have that problem, Tim Murray took care of that problem and sent that problem out of town.
Yeah. Devils don't want to do that, obviously. All right, so that's going postal. A spirited show indeed. What's on your plate coming up, sir?
What have I got? I'm going to go take the kids to the skate park. My 5-year-old, I know it's amazing. He got a scooter a couple weeks ago for his birthday. And so he's taken to it like fast. Already he's in the bowl at the skate park and doing ramps and tricks. And I'm like, you've been on this freaking thing for 2 weeks. And he's already doing drop-ins in the bowl. I know, so I'm spending like my summer at the skate park with TJ. And now Brody's starting to learn how to ride his now too. So I have a feeling that my summer's going to be consumed at the skate park. So that's where I'm headed next with my kids. How about you?
I have the kiddo for a couple weeks, and so I think this weekend will be spent watching the Minions movie. The little guys from Despicable Me, that comes out.
I know. Our kids love that.
I'll see at least that once, probably. And, you know, run around and do some stuff. Tomorrow, Leahy and I are hitting the track.
Going to the track tomorrow.
Yep.
Now, how heavily do you drink when you're at the track? I know nothing about the track, so I'll ask.
You ever been to the track?
I went about 10 years ago. Drank heavily. Went home.
I'll have a few beers during the course of the day, but by no means do I go to the track to get hammered. I go there to be in nice weather and feel the exhilaration at least once of victory and then smoke a cigar or two.
What's the great line from Krusty when Homer's talking to him about his dad? Do you think about your dad often, Krusty? I think about him all the time, except when I'm at the track. Then it's all business. Is that kind of like where you're at, Greg? It's all business at the track.
It's more business than you'd expect from someone like me. I'm a serious horse wagerer. I can read the book and find out what the horsies did. Sometimes you just pick the color of the horsey that you like, but most of the time you're doing some hardcore research on the horsies.
So you actually do your research on the horses
when I get there.
Oh, okay. So you're not like, you don't have like the prep sheet. On the way there.
But I'm also the guy that goes on vacation and reads the vacation book on the plane to the destination. You know what I mean? I'm not a schemer. I'm not a planner.
Nor am I.
Yeah.
Nor am I.
Play by
but
ear,
then
man.
Again,
it'll all work out in the end.
Then again, spontaneity has a time and a place.
Doesn't it, though?
Nope.
All right. All right. That's the show. That's me, Greg Wyszynski, and that's him, Jeff Merrick.
Dun,
we'll be
dun,
back
da,
next week for bum, more bum, stuff. Bum, thanks to Doug Wilson. Hey, Brent, can you cut the Dougie Wilson interview and send it to me on the emails? Thanks, bud.
Thanks to Brent, by the way, for stepping in for Sam, who has the... Did we determine whether it was a 26-ounce flu this morning on text? What kind of flu is it?
We didn't even talk about that. Yeah, Sam texted us. He's like, oh, I'm so sick today. I feel so terrible. I have the flu or something. And me and Merrick are like, you got the flu, whatever.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's July, second week in July. He's supposed to play golf with you and he didn't? Because he was sick. Really, Brent? Oh.
Yeah, but there's a reason to give out flu shots during flu season. It's because that's when people get the flu. Just saying. not July.
Yeah.
We believe him, of course.
Oh, why would we not? What evidence has he presented us that we wouldn't believe him?
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.